Backwards we'll look in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Celebrating 25 years, this is The Rain Report. I'm Kent Peterson, KC0DGY. In commemorating Rain's 25th year, we're going to take you back to 1990, to our first spring of production. The subject was the ECPA, the Electronic Communications Privacy Act. In 1986, Congress, with some considerable persuasion from the cellular industry, passed the ECPA, which was designed to assure reasonable privacy for cellular and other two-way users. The sponsors of this ill-conceived legislation were hoping to create a master law that once and for all would declare telephonic communications private, no matter what the form of communications being used now or in the future. Ben Cobb, KC5CW, FCC Tech News Editor, felt they failed miserably.
They introduced new errors, and they did not correct old errors and problems that had been noted by courts in the past. In the case of cordless telephones, in this Iowa court case that went before the Supreme Court, cordless telephones have a specific exemption under the ECPA. So it's not correct to say that the ECPA did not treat cordless phones. It certainly did, but it gave them a special exemption, meaning that the Privacy Act does not protect cordless telephone conversations. In the Supreme Court case, they decided to let stand a Court of Appeals ruling, if I understand it correctly, that the police did not have to have a court warrant in order to monitor a certain party's cordless telephone conversations. Because, you see, the ECPA does not prohibit anyone from listening in on the radio portions of a cordless telephone call. This is very different from its treatment of other forms of communication. The cellular telephone, for example, is declared to be private. Various forms of two-way mobile communications are allowed to monitor, and some other ones are not allowed to monitor. In some cases, the ECPA's prohibition rests on who owns the system. For example, a radio transmitter that is, say, dispatching trucks, if the transmitter is owned by a truck dispatching company, then it is permitted, in my interpretation, to monitor those frequencies. However, if the transmitter is owned by a company that is a common carrier under state law, a telephone company, then it is illegal to monitor the transmissions, even though the transmissions are the same, the equipment is the same, frequency is the same, everything is the same. So who owns the station is a very important determinant of whether or not the transmission is adjudged to be private, regardless of whether the transmissions are in fact private or any technical requirement. In drafting the law, the Congress made it very clear to the owners of the cordless telephone that buyer beware, so to speak. The law will not attempt to protect you if your signals are overheard, as we know certainly they can be very easily. So can the communications of a cellular telephone. Of course, a cellular phone operates in the 800-900 megahertz band, which used to belong to UHF television a number of years ago before the FCC reallocated it to mobile usage. As such, it can be picked up on TV. When you tune channels 80, 81, 82, 83, you can hear cellular phones and certain other kinds of mobile communication. So the frequencies certainly are not private in any practical sense of the word, but the ECPA declares that they are private and there are penalties for listening into these communications. But I should point out there are no penalties for tuning through unoccupied spectrum. There are no penalties for tuning to determine if a channel is in use, if the radio system requires that you learn that the channel is in use before transmitting on it. And the way that it affects amateur radio is kind of complicated. I should say that in the beginning, those of us who were covering this were told very explicitly by the drafters of the legislation that the FCC's allowing amateurs to auto-patch, that is to interconnect their radios with the telephone network, was illegal, and that the FCC had overstepped its authority in allowing ham radio operators to connect to the telephone system, that only cellular telephone companies should be allowed to do that. And this is really when the hue and cry started. Many people did not believe us when we said that that's what we had been told, because it seemed to be such an outrageous concept that the FCC had made a mistake in allowing autopatch. We thought autopatch was good. And a big uproar resulted from amateurs, which I think successfully defeated any movement towards banning autopatch. But there was a definite danger there. It was not somebody's fantasy. There was a definite danger because of the privacy issues. They simply wanted to be sure that any kind of telephone communication over radio was private. But in the amateur service, we don't encrypt our communications. We don't declare them to be private. We know that we use public spectrum. We try to cooperate with each other and monitor to ensure that the spectrum is used for the public good. So there's no special claim of privacy or secrecy in ham radio. And this is what was very hard to get across to the people who were drafting this legislation, who were principally advised by cellular telephone companies as far as the radio portion was concerned. The ECPA makes it illegal to own or use a surreptitious interception device. And by surreptitious, it means hidden, or some type of a receiver, essentially, an interception device, a receiver that is disguised or hidden. However, the specific wording of the ECPA prohibits surreptitious interception devices that can pick up electronic communications, any kind of electronic communication, not just those kinds of communications that it is prohibited to receive under other portions of the ECPA, such as the cellular telephone, such as encrypted communications, subcarrier, music, and these kinds of things, but any form of electronic communications. So, for example, let's say you have a radio that is concealed in a model car, or a Coke bottle, or a doll, or a stuffed animal. Many people have seen these kinds of gifts. Or for that matter, what if you have a modem installed in your computer that is not visible to the outside? It's hidden within. Or perhaps you might carry your 2-meter rig in your pocket where others can't see it. As long as the device can pick up any kind of electronic communications, it doesn't even have to be over the air. It can be by wire, such as a modem in a computer. If it's hidden, it may be deemed surreptitious, and it's subject to government seizure. Now, there have been no seizures under this provision that we know of, but I'm concerned, and some of my colleagues are concerned, that perhaps in a plea bargaining situation, somebody charged with crimes such as drug dealing or what have you might have an arrangement in which they could plead guilty to possessing a surreptitious device, such as a scanner, and the other charges would not be brought or would not be as serious.
We're turning back the digital displays to the spring of 1990, Rain's first year of production, to an interview by Rain's founder and producer Hap Holly, KC9RP, had with Ben Cobb, KC5CW, editor of the FCC Tech News in 1990. In a moment, we'll learn more about the Electronic Communications Privacy Act, some of the worst technology legislation to come down the pipe from Congress. This is The Rain Report, accessible on therainreport.com, via Twitter at The Rain Report, and on iTunes.
You're listening to The Rain Report from www.therainreport.com.
The drafters of the legislation knew this problem was in there. It was pointed out to them. They refused to do anything about it. And as such, we don't know virtually any kind of receiver or modem or anything that can pick up any kind of electronic communications. If it's carried in a way that is not obvious, if it's indoors, not viewable by the outside public, or if it's disguised in any kind of a covering, a stuffed animal, a doll, or what have you, technically it could put the owner in some serious jeopardy. It all depends on how the idea of surreptitious is going to be interpreted. Now, it's been interpreted in the past fairly narrowly, such as a listening device hidden in a martini olive, you know, or something that looks like a pen and pencil set, but actually contains a hidden transmitter. These kinds of things are not the type of thing that the average person is going to have, but the average person is going to have a device that can pick up electronic communication of whatever kind. I mean, there are telephones that look like footballs. While it may sound a little outlandish to suggest that somebody could be charged with a crime for having a telephone that looks like a football, still, the people who drafted the legislation wanted a very broad, very overarching method, in my opinion, to convict people one way or the other, and they didn't want to draw the law specifically enough to cover just those kinds of serious criminal cases that require some kind of enforcement. The real answer to these kinds of issues is not legislation that ignores the laws of physics or states that this kind of radio is private and that kind of radio is not private because of who owns it or because of who happened to lobby the government about it. There's no connection between that and reality. The way to solve these problems is not with an artificial surface law that people can point to and say, oh, my communications are private because the U.S. Congress says so. That doesn't change the technical, scientific nature of the thing. What you need instead is manufacturers of communications products and providers of communication services being told not to hide behind spurious legislation, but being told to give the consumer something that's private. If they're going to advertise it as such, then they need to provide them something with the technical capability of privacy, whether it be encryption or whether it be simple digitization. But if they don't deliver that, then they shouldn't claim that it's private.
What is the status today, Ben, of digitization and encryption?
Well, digital communications is spreading very rapidly throughout all telecommunication systems, including amateur radio. And the digital transmission of voice is clearly the method of the future for radio communications in private land mobile, in the cellular telephone, in satellite communications, point-to-point communications. All are moving towards digital. And the digital transmission of voice cannot be interpreted by the human ear because it's simply sets of tones or phase modulation. It can't be intercepted by the ear. So automatically, without any further effort, the digital network of the future will be more private, and there will be less need for these kinds of laws, which could cause some innocent people harm. I tend to be an optimist about communications half. I'm excited by all kinds of communications. That's why it's hard for me to say, but I have to say that I am pessimistic about the ECPA. The process was so politicized, disorganized, and the Congress did not achieve what it set out to achieve, but instead it wrote laws that I think are going to make life more difficult as we try to make more progress in communication. Just to give you an example, cordless telephones are an inexpensive consumer product in the United States, but in Europe, cordless telephones are blossoming into a new cordless telephone network, cordless phones that you can take with you and use in public places and within buildings in a way that is competing and in some cases may end up competing more effectively with the cellular telephone. And there's a tremendous interest into bringing this same kind of cordless phone network or networks to the United States. There is likely to be millions and millions of dollars invested in establishing these new networks. Yet the ECPA says that those systems have no privacy because they're cordless telephones. Well, what happens when really large telephone companies and large interests start to get involved? They may push to get the law modified again. As far as my closing comment, just because you know that a radio signal is transmitted and can be received by any type of receiver doesn't mean that the law considers it permitted to listen. In some cases, yes. In some cases, no. And the signal can change back and forth between prohibited and permitted, often with no notice, depending on, for example, whether a phone patch is made or whether a common carrier station is originating or receiving and so on. These are different kinds of considerations there. Ultimately, the choice comes down to you as a voter and you as a person who can communicate with your congressman that you want rational, sensible, technically competent and correct laws to govern this area and not laws that are written by people who don't know a dipole from a disc cone.
And that's a look back to the spring of 1990, RAIN's first year, to a politically charged 1986 Electronic Communications Privacy Act. RAIN's founder and producer, Hap Holly, KC9RP, spoke that spring with Ben Cobb, KC5CW, FCC tech news editor at the time of this congressional boondoggle. You may recognize Ben's name from his many years contributing to the W5YI report before its untimely demise with the passing of its editor, Fred Maya, W5YI. The RAIN Report is copyright 1990-2015, RAIN, all rights reserved. Now, for everyone connected with this weekly ham radio podcast, I'm Kent Peterson, KC0DGY, bidding you a very 73 from the Radio Amateur Information Network, accessible on therainreport.com. From Twitter @TheRainReport and via iTunes.